This is Saturday morning, February 25th, 1995. I am Ward Russell, member of the Historical Committee of the Outrigger Canoe Club, and I remember also the committee that has been conducting all interviews of some of our most prominent members. Today, it is my pleasure to interview past president Tom Arnott, one of our longtime members and a very prominent member. We're in the Duke Room, and it is a beautiful Sunday, but Saturday morning. Tom?
Good morning.
Delighted to have you here. Just a little bit of background information on you. Where were you born?
Where was I born?
Yep.
I was born here in Honolulu at Kapiolani Maternity Hospital on August 26, 1921.
Makes me
73.
73. Tell me a bit about your parents.
My father's from London, England,
uh-huh.
And my mother's from Portland, Oregon. And my dad met my mother on a trip around the world. He was taking a trip from England, going all the way around. He met my mother here, and he married her here and never left. And he remained as an English citizen, never becoming an American. I'm an American, but he never made it.
What about do you have any brothers and sisters?
Yeah, my brother Bob passed away quite a few years ago. He wasn't a member of the Outrigger. But my brother had two sons, Bobby and Tom, and they both were members of the Outrigger, and then they left and moved to Hawaii and gave up their membership. But they were active in volleyball and paddling.
How about you? What kind of a family do you have?
I have one son, mm-hmm. adopted.
Uh-huh.
He's 40 years old. He lives in California. He's in a very important trade that he seems to like, and that's sales. He's sort of taken on my position when I was a sales manager at Carnation Company. He's in the food sales business.
Let's talk a little bit about your educational background. Where did you go to school?
I went to school at Roosevelt High School. And I attended and did not graduate from the University of Hawaii. The war broke out and sort of nullified that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was studying to be an architect before the war, going to night school. And then when the war broke out, I was drafted into Pearl Harbor. They just recruited me right in there, and I became a draftsman there. And I was in Pearl Harbor all during the war as an architectural draftsman.
All right. Yeah, I didn't realize you had that background. Then how did you go from architecture to Carnation?
Yeah, that's a good one. I met a guy by the name of John Wilkinson. He was the vice president of Carnation, and we became very friendly. And about 3 days later, he said, "Come down in the Royal. I'd like to interview and talk to you." So that's how I became associated with Carnation. I decided that it was just a little too much after all the years to go into architecture again. I mean, I was away from it for 4 years or so. So I thought, I'll take a chance and go into this thing. And I enjoyed it. I was with Carnation for 41 years.
41 years?
In sales, and became a district manager Pacific for all of the Hawaii,
uh-huh.
and Micronesia, Guam, Saipan, all that.
Has that activity taken you on your visits through all that area?
Yes, uh-huh. At least two times a year I'd go on a tour,
really?
Of that sort. We had wholesalers that we worked with, and I'd go and do my sales work for them.
I want to make sure that I think this is worth it, too. Yeah, well, good chance. But when you retired now?
I'm retired. I've been retired for 5 years now.
My time surely flies.
It sure does.
Let's go back to your days at Roosevelt High School. Wait, what sports were you in your Boonstra?
I was in track. I ran 440.
Uh-huh.
And I played football, not extensively, because I was too tall and too light. I was a good runner, but I just didn't have the weight to make a good football player.
What year were you running the 440?
She was. That was way back in 39, 40, so I went through there. Yeah. Around that time.
Yeah, right.
That's when we ran against our great competitors, Punahou.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're saying. What year was that? 30? I remember 30, oh, 40. In the 30s, is that?
Yeah, it was in the 30s.
I'm trying to remember. I ran track. I was never any good. I was a very poor athlete. Well, when did you become interested in the Advocate Canoe Club?
I became interested in the Advocate Canoe Club when I was 9 years old, and I used to come down here with my uncle, who was a member, Raymond Ketchner. And he was a
Raymond
Ketchner, K-I-K-E-T-C-H-N-E-R, and. He was an avid member and wanted me to join the club, and so he sponsored me, and that's how I became a member. And
what year was that? What year was that?
Gee, 9 years old. That's going back. I didn't really figure that one out. Anyway, I've been a member for 63 years, so you could go back on that.
How old are you now?
I'm 73. So what?
73, 9 years old.
Yeah, well, you got it.
64 years? You've been a member of this club for 64 years?
Yeah.
So that's impressive.
How about you, Mark?
Well, I've only been a member. I didn't join until after the war. So I've only been for 40-some years.
Yeah.
You've been a member a long time.
Yeah.
Well, I was about 30.
Well, I go back and remember the old club. You know, we had the Hall Terrace.
Oh, what were your recollections of the old club? Which club was that?
That was still on Kalakaua Avenue. We had a parking lot that you had to go into that was, it would only park about maybe 30 cars at the most. And that was in the front entry to the club. It was a one-story structure with an upper structure, which was a dance hall up in the upper area. And we used to rent out that every Saturday night, and it was quite a growing thing. The lower structure was a locker room and a little area that had to do with the front desk, where old dad's, was it Bob Ford, used to be in there and be with it. And those are the days of Lex Brody and Waldo Bowman and all the great athletes that he went up through the ranks. And Lex at one time was a tremendous high jumper and a good volleyball player.
Yeah.
Had all my basic training through those guys.
Do you remember Alexander Ford pretty well?
Oh, yeah.
You think?
Yeah, he was a cute little duck. He always wore a white suit, and he always looked ruffled. He never looked like he was neat. He was always sort of dirty-looking guy, but a very, very nice dog, really nice. He'd climb up in the second club. He'd climb up the rungs of the entry to the club where there was a gutter.
Uh-huh.
And he'd reach up and clean the gutter out with his hands.
Really?
Yeah. And he'd do that every day. It was just sort of a ritual. Here comes Pop.
And, I think it is.
And he was a very sort of intense individual. Didn't meet a lot of people. He wasn't very friendly in that direction. He was quite a guy.
Let's see. You say you were 9 years old when you joined the club.
Uh-huh.
What other recollections of the club do you have?
The old club?
Yeah, the old club.
Well, I can remember the stand at the old club that where we still had the clock from the old club. You know that? Up against the wall.
Yes.
And that was on a separate stand that was out on the beach. And we would time ourselves and leave to go out and go surfing. And then we could see that clock when we were out surfing, come in, get as close as we could, and then paddle back out and time our total amount of hours that we were out there. And we'd always try to outdo each other. And I think one time I was out there for 8.5 hours, close to 9 hours surfing. And you come in with all our, you know, those duck pumps you got on your fingers and stuff. just trying to outdo the other, you know.
You know, it's very interesting. Andy, when did you first get on a surfboard?
Gee whiz, I guess when I was about 11 years old, or 11.
How did you first learn to surf? I mean, those were big boards and heavy boards.
I took 12 of us to take those redwood boards out, and we'd make our own boards. We'd go down to, what was it? I've forgotten the name of that place where the Alawana shopping center is right across the street. And there was a big mill there. And we'd go down and get these big Lewis and Cook.
Yeah.
Right. We'd go down and get these big logs and then go up and shape our own boards. Varnish them, weighed a ton. And then we began to get a little smart. We dug out the center part of the boards and then put a little plate over them. And they were a little lighter, but not as good. Then they went into the swastika board. Remember those? They were balsa.
Yep.
When they were laminated with redwood and balsa. And that was a good board.
Did you make your own boards?
We did make our own redwood boards, but the swastika was a brand, I think, that came out of California.
What do you call them?
Swastika.
Swastika?
Yeah, it had a swastika imprint on the board.
That's the first time I said that.
Yeah. And then from there, I went into the hollow boards. And I had a hollow board, which they were great. Nice and light, easy to surf. In fact, you get into some of the heavy winds you'd fly over the back of the waves. It's so light.
When did you first learn to surf? What section of the beach there?
In an area called Cornucopia,
where would that be?
That would be right out in front of the Royal, where you could go out. And there was a sand spit there. It was right next to canoe surf, and you could stand up in your waist, and then as the wave came in and built, push off and then surf, and that's how I learned most of my beginning in surfing and stuff. Then I gradually got over to the canoe surf, and then to an area called Badung, which is a break that was right there.
Now, you know, in previous interviews, I've made the mistake of, you know, people name these areas. And I have asked them to identify where those areas were specifically located. Now, you mentioned that you established for Cornucopia.
Yeah.
Then you moved over to what was the next one?
That was, then from there you go over in an area called Blowhole.
Yeah, and that's Blowhole would be where now?
That's out in front of the old club.
Yeah.
And then further, going toward Queen Surf, would be Canoe Surf. And then from there would be Badung, and then further would be...
It's the first time I've ever heard anybody use that phrase, Badung.
Badung, yeah. Well, Badung was when you went from canoe surf and you were sliding right, Badung was the wave that would break over you and get you. So we always call that Badung.
You've had it on your head.
Oh, yeah, sure. But it was always a challenge to make it through Badung. If you made it through Badung, you were great.
Well, then what are the other surfs?
Well, behind canoe surf was first break, and then zero break was out in the middle of the bay, and out further, way out, was what they call bluebird. That was out with the blue water when they come in. And that was very slow. Maybe once every 5 years you'd get those things coming in. And to the right, in front of the Halekulani Hotel, was popular surf. That was that was a good surf. There was the great surf areas where it was popular, canoe, and the queen surf.
Queen, yeah. And then getting further toward Diamond Head, what's the...
Toward Diamond Head. I didn't go out there that often. I couldn't see. As you went out along there, right out in front of the club, our present club.
What about Kuna's?
Kuna's, yeah, that's right. Kuna's was right along this area, right in front of the club.
That would be on there, right out in front of Opie's store.
Yeah, right. Gee, where'd you go back along, right?
Then, of course, you get further into Public Baths and Castle.
Castle. Yeah. Well, Castle's outside.
Way up.
Way outside. Where Bluebird goes through there, to Castle. I remember surfing with Duke and David and Sam Kahanamoku. When we went out and caught a wave at Castle and went along parallel to the shore, you know, where the reef is, along here, and went into all the way, cut left, and went all the way back into canoe surf, all the way up, right up to the Royal Hawaiian Hotel. Nice. And when I sat down on the board, I was just shaking. Shaking.
I fell off the board.
I couldn't even pick the board up. And Duke and the rest went out. I couldn't. That was it for me.
But then you pretty much surfed every area above the Waikiki.
Yeah. But in those days, you know, that was the only place to surf. Yeah. Now it's Makaha and all the rest of them, all the way around the island. And we never had surf reports, you know. We just phoned the club, called the company, out the way, and they'd give us a... That was when I was living in Manoa. I never could see the ocean and wouldn't know what it was like. And I'd call the club and say, are there any waves? What's the waves like? Hey, they're building up. Okay, I'll be down.
I used to get out of Diamond Head, and I thought it was the longest club, but I had a lot of experience at club.
Yeah.
I had to change course underneath those diner properties.
Oh, yeah?
I learned pretty much the favorite area.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get it on the record. You know?
Yeah.
That's a description of that. Okay, you mentioned Duke. I know that you were one of Duke's boys.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, Duke... I met Duke, through the club, and we became friends and surfing and doing things like that. And then all of a sudden, he decided that he would start out a six-man crew for the outrigger. And we had them, but we were never really that good. And so a bunch of us were all sitting around down at the beach in front of the club, and Duke came up and said, hey, you kids look like you're in good shape. You want to learn how to paddle a canoe? Really learn how to paddle a canoe? Would you come along with me? So he said, sure, yeah, we'll go. So he taught us how to paddle a canoe. But that was, he was a very strict, particular, hard guy to work for. I'd get so darn mad at him at times. I remember one time I had a bad cold I got in there. I was waiting on the beach, and I said, Duke, I don't think I better go, because I got a, you know, you can hear me. I've got a bad cold. He said, get in the canoe. So I got in the canoe, and I started paddling and stuff, and I just felt real bad. So we went out, and at that time, we had the markers outside for the Walter McFarland canoe race, and we had the flags up. So we practiced that and go around the marks. And the third time around, I jumped overboard, I quit. And we got in close to shore. And for a month, I would go down after that. I'd go down every day and sit on the beach to wait to be called to go in the canoe. He let me sit on the beach. He would have nothing to do with me. He wouldn't even talk to me. And finally, he said, okay, kid, get in the canoe. And I had a real good lesson. So he was that kind of a stickler. Boy, when we go out and paddle, we paddle from the old outrigger down along parallel to the beach, in, up the Alawai Canal, back down from the Alawai Canal, back up to the outrigger. And then he'd say, okay, one time around the flag, that would be out to the Walter McFarland. That time the flag was a mile out. It was a mile. And so we'd go out and go around the flag, come back in, and we'd expect him to say, wait up, okay, relax, around again, and just continue to where we were in absolutely fantastic shape. No one could touch it. And it was that shape and that conditioning that where we never lost our feet. You wouldn't even come close to us. We would swap a canoe coming in, bail a canoe out, and catch up with the other crew that would pass it. We were in that good condition. Fantastic. One time on a Sunday was our worst day, because he would really give it to us. And we'd start at 7 o'clock in the morning. We'd be calling about maybe 10, 30, or 11, just paddling. We'd go right out into blue water, way, way outside. Then he'd say, wait up, and we'd stop, and then we'd all jump overboard and relax again, loosen up, and then we'd come back into the club and take our shower, have a nice steak brunch, and go and see the first show at the Waikiki Theater. And Duke could go all along with us and stuff, and we'd all be sitting there back in the back seat. We look over at Duke, he could sound asleep. He didn't even see the show. But this was every Sunday we would do that.
He got tired.
Yeah. But he was a stickler for conditioning, and that was the main thing. With us, if we didn't have the conditioning, we couldn't have been so good as we were.
You had quite a record of winning.
We never lost a race. Never lost a race, even in two-man. With Jimmy Pfluger, I paddled as a steersman, and Jimmy was a stroke, two-man. Used to have that, and then they had four-man, then they had six-man. And we never lost any one of those races at all. And Duke was a stickler. He was a coach.
About how long a period was that? How many years?
About 7 years.
How many?
Seven.
7 years?
7 years.
I didn't even know.
And we stuck together. Our crew was there all the time. We even had a competitive crew from the club, two competitive crews that came up to race against us, and they couldn't touch us because of our condition. Uh-huh. And they were half Okoli kind of paddlers. They just didn't work as hard as we did.
Well, that's interesting.
We paddled in Honolulu Harbor, raced there for a while. In dead water, in Honolulu Harbor, we paddled there. We used to have races there. Boy, that was hard. That was really hard. Because you had no motion of the water. It's just dead. You get out in open water, you have wind, and then you have the current, and all that helps you.
What about, is there anything more on paddling that you can think of?
I used to, I sailed with Duke.
You what?
I sailed with Duke, an S boat, a 29-foot boat, and I crewed with him and with his brother David, the three of us. And I sailed and crewed with him for about, 4 years. And I learned a lot about sailing through Duke. And then it was through Duke that I got interested in sailing in Transpac. And I sailed three Transpac races.
Did you sail three Transpac races?
On Larry Doheny's boat, the Kamaliki.
Yeah.
76-foot catch. And in fact, I sailed on the Kamaliki all down through Mexico to Acapulco, Mazatlan, and then all the way up to the northwest. And Larry and I were talking about that, and we figured that I sailed 38,000 miles on his yacht.
How old are you then?
Let's see, I was in my 40s.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you've had a remarkable water career, haven't
you? Oh, yeah. It's a lot of fun. Sometimes you get out there in that transpac, you'd start, it would be a lot of fun, everybody would be together as a crew, and then the race would start, and you'd go out into the ocean about 25 miles, and you'd get into doldrums. There'd be no wind. You'd just sit there and lap straight. Just nothing but the sail making all this lapping sound. And you'd go down below and you'd be, it would be hot and humid, and you'd sweat in a wetsuit, and you'd think, what am I doing out here? What is all this about? I mean, they call this a real sport? I mean, what the heck is this? And then finally, about the third day, you'd get out and you'd get into the train. And then, oh boy, it was back to swimsuits and going around with just nothing but that and shoes and getting a tan and enjoying the, oh, just beautiful. And the camaraderie was great, too.
How did you finish those races?
We had 70 some odd holes in the race. And the closest we ever got was we came in ninth, which is all right. What the heck?
It's a wonderful experience.
It is. I think it's the camaraderie that does it, you know, the closest you have with your fellow crew members.
I talk to people who have been on those races and they say, well, after this, never again. And then next year, somewhere next time the race comes up and they're back in.
That's right. That's what I'd say.
Yeah, what am I doing this?
Yeah, what am I doing? Oh, again?
How about volleyball?
Volleyball. Oh, I played volleyball way back in 1946 with a Sergeant Kahanamoku. We had a two-man at that time. I guess you still have it here, a two-man. And we became volleyball champs in 1947. And I played a lot of volleyball. Sergeant was a crazy kind of guy. He had a lot of good friends, and he had a lot of people who didn't like him very much because he was a clown.
Who? This is
a sergeant.
Oh, yeah.
And he'd say, okay, put the ball, serve the ball over to me. So I'd serve it over to him. And instead of getting the ball in his hands, he'd let it bounce off his head and then go over the net. And he'd cause a riot, you know. You can't do that.
Okay.
He really was.
What was your recollection of the Kahanamoku brothers? How many of them did you know, and which ones did you know?
Oh, I knew all of them. Bill, I guess, is still around. He's a hunchback.
Yeah.
And then Sam was working with Doris Duke Cromwell. He worked for her and was her driver and keeper, I guess. And David was a captain in the Army. And it retired, and had a home over on Maui for quite a while. Married and divorced. Well, Duke, you know about him. Louis, I guess he went into the ministry, didn't he?
When he died just about a year ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he passed away.
Yeah. He was sort of the father of canoe racing on Hawaii. Because they were very active in the corner.
That's right, they were. That's right.
Through them, you know, they brought the Tahitian canoes into the scene. We had a lot
that
of
was
problems.
A mistake.
Fast canoes. They wouldn't abide by the restrictions of the rules and regulations, the dimensions that were specified.
Right. They brought their own paddles with a T-top on them and stuff.
So you've seen a number of clubs, the old club, then what would be the next day? I built the 1941 club.
Yeah, that's right. And I was going to school. And during the summer, Ralphie Woolley was the guy that put the 1941 club. He built it.
Yeah.
And he was a contractor. And I worked for him. So,
oh, you did?
And I did most of the foundations with a shovel.
No kidding.
For the 1941 club. So as soon as the whistle was blown, I'd run like hell, take off I'd have my swimsuit on, run like hell, grab the board and go and surf for about an hour after work. So that was good fun, you know, be right there all the time. So I actually watched the construction of the 1941 club.
Well, that's, you know, it's 64 years. You've seen the so many changes, isn't it?
Yeah, all of it good.
Yeah.
Even this change that we have right now is a great, great addition to the club.
You probably have some pretty good memories of some of the characters.
Oh, yeah.
How about the manager? Did any one particular manager with you?
Oh, what was his name? Yes. Can't remember his
name. One I remember, Ted McGill.
Oh, McGill, he was a character, yeah. I'm thinking of the guy that's the canoe that's in the club now, that's up on in the bar of the club up on top.
Yeah.
That's called the Stephanie, and that was after his daughter. He was the manager of the club at that time. I can't think of his name.
Oh, we'll put it in a...
Well, anyway, he was a real character, a very hot-tempered type of guy. And he'd really get in fist fights with some of the members.
Really?
Yeah, if they weren't... Henry Jagora.
Who?
Henry Jagora.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Remember him?
Yes.
God, he was a feisty son of a guy. I've seen him get in the fight and then they become fast friends again.